Blog Talk Radio.
In danger of the curse of the fruit bat. So don't come here being a fruit bat. This is a fruit bat program. You are good. Relax, my color. Today's program. If you would like to be a guest to call into the show, the call-in number is 646-478-5284. That's 646-478-5284. And you can call in and talk about anything related to the subject matter, but I will give you a warning. Please be attentive to the aforementioned fruit bat alert. Or the fruit bat warning. If you want to come here being a fruit bat, that's somebody who likes to indulge in excessive cussing, character assassinations, gaslighting, and the insults, just wanting to come in and be disruptive to the program. I will tell you now, if you want to indulge in those kind of activities, you best not try to call in or engage, because we're about mature conversations on this program, okay? I don't care if you agree with me or disagree with me. You know, come in here and be civil, okay? Like I said, make sure you season your comments well with respect, or you will suffer the curse of the fruit bat. Folks, last week I was supposed to do a show, and I don't know what happened with Blog Talk Radio. They said things were messing up, and I couldn't do a show last week, and which is something I'm trying to mitigate, you know, that type of problem. I know it's not on my end, you know, when Blog Talk Radio says that they're having a problem, but I'm trying to mitigate that problem. Because, you know, I don't want to go so many days without doing a show, you know. Already, you know, I'm already off once a month on the first weekend of every month, you know, give me some time to refresh and reflect and everything and stuff like that. But I don't want too many days when I'm scheduled to have a show to be canceled. So, and I'm trying to get into my chat room, and that is not working out for me for some reason, you know, and the chat room is important for me because You know, people can come in and tell me, well, your sound is blurry or you got an echo or something like that, or we can't hear you. And right now, everything looks to be fine. It looks like everything is on. So hopefully folks can hear me. And if not, you'll probably have to just call in and tell me, hey, bro, you can't, we can't hear you. But whatever happened last week, I hope it doesn't happen again. I'm really tempted to just go flat out to podcast, you know, to make sure that my message gets out there. You know, I don't know what the reason is for Blog Talk Radio messing up on occasion like this. Never used to have this happen. But, you know, here lately, in the past few years, you know, it happens every now and then. I don't know if someone's goofing up with the system, or somebody doesn't like what I'm saying, or I don't know what it is, you know. But it kind of messed me up, kind of threw me off of a rhythm, you know, because I wanted to get back into this thing and, you know, continue giving you all quality content, if that makes any sense. But, today I got a whole lot of things going on mentally, and I'm not saying that something's wrong with me mentally today or anything like that. A couple of weeks ago, my wife had made she made a ribeye steak, and them things were good, but it was a bone fragment in it, and I crunched down on it and cracked a tooth. And no matter how painful you might think that is, trust me, when you go through it, personally, it is way more painful than you may think. And so I went to the dentist, and they said they're going to have to remove my two right wisdom teeth, you know, which I wish they had removed them the day I got examined, because I've been having to go through about 2 weeks of pain now. You know, this happened 2 weeks ago, and I've been going through the pain. I've been having to take painkillers, which is something I don't like doing. I had to take some. They had to give me an antibiotic called amoxicillin, and that's something I don't like because, you know, it messes up with your stomach sometimes. I'm suffering slight, you know, side effects from that. But I'm a person, I just don't like taking drugs of any kind. If I could get away with not taking an aspirin or ibuprofen or amoxicillin or any of this other stuff, I would just avoid it, you know, because I'm just not a medicine person. I never have been, never really liked medicine. But one thing I don't like, too, is pain. And whenever that pain comes up in my tooth, the pain is basically constant. But I dampen it down with some Advil because, you know, the Advil kind of takes the pain away and whatever. And, you know, that's basically what I'm going through. So this Thursday or next Thursday, I'm scheduled to get my wisdom teeth removed, and hopefully that gets rid of the pain, you know. And this morning I attended a funeral this morning. Of a person I've known since the late 80s, you know, this person was 70 years old and he passed away. He had suffered from diabetes, and from what I heard, they had removed both of his legs. And, you know, he passed last Saturday, matter of fact, day before Mother's Day. And, you know, every time someone passes away, someone that you've known for a while or whatever, you know, it gets me to thinking about the afterlife. You know, those of you all who know me know I am a Christian. I am a born-again Christian. I believe in the Bible. I believe in heaven and hell. I believe in judgment day. I believe in man's sin problem, and Jesus is the solution to that sin problem. You know, and every time someone passes away, it gets me to thinking about, you know, death and life, you know, the afterlife, you know, And one of the first things I always think of when someone passes away is, I hope that person knew the Lord. You know, because, and whether they call themselves a Christian or not, I always ask that question. Or I always make that statement, I hope they knew the Lord. And it in a way, I believe it may be God's way, you know, why he allows people to die like this. It may be God's way of letting you know, hey, you know, it could happen at any time. You know, you got some of these preachers going around confessing that, you know, they're gonna live to be 120 years old and everything. And when I look up and I see the bigger picture, I don't know too many people who have lived to be 120 years old personally. I know there are people that have lived to be that age, but it's not very common in the grand scheme of things. And I listened to him saying this. Now, this guy was 70 years old. So in the eyes of some people, he died 50 years too early, which some people will be blessed to live to see 70 years. And as far as I know, this guy, he suffered with diabetes for at least 10 years. His eyes were going, and like I said, he had his legs removed. And, you know, I got word from my wife, because my wife works up at the church that he was a member of, that this dude had passed away. And this dude, he was responsible for me finding a place to stay when I first stayed here in Durham in 1988. 1987 was a horrible year for me as far as that previous summer. And I got to thinking about it. I said, look, I'm not going back to Washington, D.C. for this summer. And I said, you know what? And it was a last minute thing for me. I was 19 years old. I was 19 years old. And I was thinking about, you know, the HE double hockey sticks I went through in Washington, D.C. the summer. And I said, I don't want to go through that again. And basically at last minute, I said, you know what? I'm staying in Durham. And this guy, he was like, you know, you can stay with me the summer and everything. And, you know, I didn't have a bed to sleep in or any. I didn't know where I was going to sleep. But by the next day, had a bed to sleep in, you know, had a place to stay. And that's where I stayed during that summer. And I just made the decision, say, hey, I'm going to stay in Durham. And I've been on my own since I was 19 years old. You know, I was the type of person, I was like, you know, I don't want to stay home. I want to get out. You know, you got some of these people that want to stay with their parents and stuff like that. I was like, nah. I said, I want to get out of home. And that's what I did. That's exactly what I did. So, but this guy, he was responsible for me having a place to stay. And not long after that, I was trying to get back into school, so I was able to stay in the dorm. But my financial aid got messed up and whatever, and I wasn't able to continue to go to school. And so by the next year, I had, you know, become, you know, a missionary. And they said, you know, at this church, I've become a missionary. And they said, you know, we'll pay for your room and board, and we'll pay you so much a month. And I was a missionary for 3 years. And when that 3 years was over with, I went back to this same guy, and he gave me another place to stay. Now, by this time, he was married, but he lived in sort of a duplex. He lived on one side, and, you know, he had a boarding house on the other side. And so I stayed, that's where I stayed for 7 years. And I'll be honest with you, it was 7 years too long. He and I didn't see eye to eye on a lot of things. That's beside the point. I digress on that. You know, God still used him to be a blessing, you know, for me to be able to stay, have a place to stay, you know. And I attended his funeral. And his wife was, you know, she of course, she was real tore up about him passing away. His six kids were there and everything. And I was amazed at how many people came to this man's funeral, because you know, the sanctuary looked like you were having a regular church service on Sunday. But it always, when someone passes away, which is something I do not like about getting old, you know, or getting older. Now, I've had, all through my life, I've had, you know, people pass away tragically and everything. But it seems like now that I'm older, it happens more frequently. You know, people you've known for a while, of course, people are going to get old and they're going to pass away. That's one thing I understand. It's something I understand, but I don't like to experience. You know, I've had, I know of four people within the last year. Well, really, five people that I've known within the last year, just not even a year's time, that have passed away. People that I knew personally. But it goes to show you that, hey, we don't know when our time is going to be up. And if our time is up, you know, a lot of times we plan for, hey, we're going to take care of our families. We want to be sure our families are taken care of when we pass away. But, you know, we get concerned about that. But one thing a lot of us, I notice, are not concerned about is our eternal security. Whether we're going to go to heaven or whether we're going to go to hell, because there is an eternal reward for your time on this earth. And I know some people, I know there are people who listen to this program who don't believe in Christianity. And there are a lot of things about Christianity that people have gotten wrong. But that is my belief system, you know. And a lot of people, sometimes they want to debate you about, you know, Christianity, what Christianity really is and whatever. And they try to use some type of scientific method or whatever, but that's not how you determine who's a Christian. Me, like I said before, I believe in the Bible, and I'm going to go to the Bible for my source on Christianity. Now, there are a lot of misconceptions about what a Christian is and what Christianity has done in history. You know, a lot of people say, well, those Christians, they murdered people and everything. Those were not Christians. People talk about the Crusades. Those were not Christians. They talk about the Great Inquisition, the Roman Catholic Inquisition. Those people were not Christians. And see, in order to be able to judge what a Christian is, you have to understand what a Christian is. And that's where I come from. And that's why I do this program. See, I don't do this to be political, you know, because you got people who, oh, I'm on the conservative side, I'm on the liberal side. This is why I tell people I don't deal with politics. I want to deal with truth, because people will hold on to their politics in spite of the truth. Basically, what politics does is says choose a side, and whatever side that you are on, don't listen to what the other side is saying. I've seen liberals do this. Liberals are experts at this. 80% of the time, the liberals are experts at this, but I've also seen people on the right or the conservatives do this as well. We're not going to listen to those people on the other side. We're not going to be open-minded to what they have to say. We're just going to stick to our party's platform. But 9 times out of 10, well, I'll say 10 times out of 10, I find myself voting conservative, because being a conservative is what holds closest to my beliefs. Now, you might be a conservative, but that doesn't mean that you are a Christian. And a lot of people say, oh, these Christian conservatives, these people, these conservatives are always trying to push their Christian values on us. Just because you are conservative, that does not make you a Christian. That does not mean that you are okay with Almighty God. Because I've seen people, you know, I know of people who are homosexual, which the Bible says is a sin, but you have homosexuals who are conservative as well. And I'm going to tell people the truth about homosexuality, that it's a sin. I don't care about your political leanings. If what you're doing is against the Bible, it is my duty as a Christian to tell you that this is a sin. And if I don't like to sit here and debate with people about that. If you want to believe the way you want to, that's fine. But this is what I've learned through my experience with the Bible throughout pretty much my entire adult life. And that's why I come from where I, you know, that's the reason why I come, you know, from the area that I usually do on this show. I'm having a loss of words here. But whenever I come on this program, I try to give it to you from a Christian perspective, not trying to force Christianity on you, not trying to shove some doctrine down your throat. Because if I tried to shove this down your throat, then I cease to be a Christian. Because Jesus didn't shove his doctrine down people's throat either. You're given a choice. Do you want to follow this way or do you want to follow that way? But whichever way you follow, there's a corresponding consequence that comes with it. And a lot of people don't understand that. And some people, you know, they believe in evolution and all this. I was listening to a guy on an audio book the past couple of weeks, and the guy made a lot of good points. But he also said that, you know, there are people who don't believe in the science of evolution. Evolution is not science. You can't observe evolution and say, okay, that's evolution right there. Now, people can draw, you know, these diagrams and show you, you know, the process of evolution and everything, but that's not science. That's based on someone's opinion. And they say, okay, well, this is how it may have happened. This is the way it probably happened. But they cannot point anywhere in the fossil record or anywhere through biology, anywhere, that evolution is indeed a fact. And I've heard people who call themselves Christians believing in evolution. I don't see how you can do that. How in the world can you believe in evolution and you're a Christian? You know, how are you going to explain the account of Adam and Eve? When you read the account of Adam and Eve, it says God formed Adam out of the dust of the earth. After a while, he takes a rib out of Adam's side and he makes a woman with it. See, that's not evolution. That's God working. And, you know, you got some people say, well, you know, God didn't create the world in 6 literal days. They took thousands of years. They're trying to marry the biblical account with evolution. It does not work. Those were 6 literal days that God took to create the heavens and the earth. Now, I didn't come on this show today to preach to you religion, you know, but what I'm preaching is not religion. But you can believe whatever you want to. I can't put you in a full Nelson and get you to believe the way I do. That's not Christian. But there is a corresponding consequence that goes with your choice. If you want to follow Jesus, boom, eternal life. If you don't want to follow Jesus, boom, you're not going to have eternal life. And that every time someone passes away, this is kind of what goes on in my mind, you know, about, you know, eternal, a person's eternal destiny, their eternal reward. Was this person really a Christian? It's not for me to judge whether that person was a Christian or not. They've gone on to their eternal destiny. My thing is, have I got myself straight? Am I walking in the faith? Because that person, whether they go to heaven or they go to the other place, has no bearing on me. Because I'm an individual, and I have to make sure that myself is straight before, you know, I pass away. Because when you pass away, and I know a lot of people don't believe this, you know, they want to bring up the, you know, the ancient manuscripts and, you know, this was 15,000 years ago and this is 20,000 years ago and this is what they said and this is history and everything. Look, you might see it as history, but keep in mind that man is fallible. Man is fallible. God is not. But anyway, having said all that, let me get into what I wanted to talk about on today's program. And before I go on to what I want to talk about with today's program, let me leave you with this question. And I've done it before in this program, and I'll do it again. If you were to die today, where would you spend eternity? That's a rhetorical question, okay? But anyway, what I wanted to get to on today's program was this case of there's a case going on, and people are trying to George Floyd it. And when I say George Floyd, I'm saying that we got a case of a black person who got killed by a white cop. And now they want to make a big deal out of it because, you know, white cop bad, black person innocent. Now, what I wanted to talk about was this case with Roger Fortson. He was a military man who, when the story first broke, and see, this is a problem with that I have with the news media. The news media doesn't try to figure the story out before they put it out there on the airwaves. They just see the story, they put it out there for you, and they're like, you know, hey, this is going to get us big ratings and everything. We're going to get a big reaction. People might react in a certain way that we're going to get big ratings. But when this story was first put out, it was told that the police had gone to the wrong house. They were looking for somebody. They had gone to the wrong house. This guy, you know, he answers to the door, you know, to a door knock. He looks through the peephole. The peephole is blocked. And so he gets a gun and he opens the door and it turns out it's the police. The police see him with a gun and they just shoot him dead. And so everyone's up here again. His mother is you know, she's gone to town on the tears, and everyone's like, oh, see, we told you all about these white cops shooting and killing these innocent black men. They came to the wrong house. Well, it turns out they did not come to the wrong house. And see, this is the type of did with Breonna Taylor. This is the type of thing they did with Trayvon Martin. This is the type of thing they did with George Floyd. They throw this story out here, and by the time all the details about the story have really come out, the truth of the story comes out, people are already believing a certain way, and you're not going to get them to think anything different. They get into this cognitive dissonance. When the evidence comes in and shows that what the initial story reported was wrong, people still want to go in their line of thinking. And I really do believe the news media does this intentionally. The news media doesn't care about the truth. It only cares about news. And any way it can manipulate the news to get you to react a certain way, that's all they care about. And so, and this incident happened in a place that I'm somewhat familiar with, Fort Walton Beach, Florida. I visited a friend there a little more than 10 years ago. Okaloosa Island, you know, it's not too far from Pensacola, and Denton is right across the bridge from Fort Walton Beach. You know, it's a beautiful area. They call it the Emerald Coast because when you go to the water, it's got this beautiful green, this beautiful crystal green look to it, and that's why they call it the Emerald Coast. And I visited there in December of 2013. If you to take a trip to a beautiful area, I would suggest the Panhandle of Florida, the Emerald Coast. But this incident happened here, and like I said, the initial report was that this dude, you know, he's just, you know, doing whatever. Police knock on his door. He opens the door with a gun in his hand, and the police just shoot him dead for no reason. And like I said, I believe that the news media knows what they're doing when they do this. And when the details come out, they say, oops, my bad. But the damage has already been done. People are not going to think about this another way. They're still going to think that the police came up here, they knocked on the wrong door, and they killed this dude in cold blood. But the story comes that there were sounds of a domestic dispute coming from this young man's apartment. And people called the police saying there's a domestic dispute going on. So the police, they come to the apartment, they came to the right apartment and knocked on the door, and they alerted whoever was inside that it's the police at the door. Now, the story goes that this dude didn't know it was the police at the door. Now, I don't know where they got that from, because the dude got killed at the location. And I don't know how anyone could say that he didn't know it was the police. But the police knocked on his door two times. They told him it was the police. So the dude, when he answers the door, he opens the door with a gun in his hand. Now, the gun is pointed downward. I don't know why the police shot him. But he knew it was the police at the door. There's no doubt about it. There's a video, and I was trying to get it loaded into my chat room, but for some reason, I can't get my chat room up. I don't know if that's a Blog Talk Radio thing or my, I believe it's a Blog Talk Radio thing, but I wanted to get this set up in my chat room, but you know, my chat room ain't working. But the video footage shows that the police did knock at the right apartment, and this dude came with the gun in his hand, and the police shot him. I don't know if he pointed the gun at them, but I'm gonna look at the video right quick. Okay. Okay, so what they're saying is, you know, this happens all the time, but this time it really sounded really rough. You know, it's really getting out of hand. So the police are going to his apartment. So you hear that they knocked two times and said, sheriff's office, open the door. Two times. So there's no question that whoever is in there should know that this is the sheriff's office knocking at their door. Now, looking at the video, this is a body cam. No one is blocking the peephole. Because people said that, you know, this dude looked through the peephole and someone had blocked the peephole. I don't know how they got that out of, you know, I don't know if dead people can talk or whatever, but I don't know how they got that from this incident. But let me continue. Now, they opened the door. Now, I couldn't tell if he had pointed the gun at them or whatever, because the police were at one side of the door. They weren't, you know, right square front at the door. The police officer was a little bit to the left. I'm going to play it again. So he opens the door. I don't know if he pointed the gun at them, and that's basically the video. I don't know if you could hear that or whatever. Okay. I don't know if I could get that on my chat room. The chat room is still messing up, so. But there you have it. They came there. They were alerted to a domestic dispute at this apartment. They said it goes on all the time, but this time it was really getting bad. So the police go up to the apartment. They knock on the door twice and say, you know, Sheriff's Department, open the door. They were not blocking the peephole. Now, I wasn't able to see what happened when the dude opened the door. But the clip that they show you, the man has his gun down to his side. And I don't know why they shot him when they opened the door, you know, but of course, you know, the apostles of blackness are out there saying, oh, when they saw it was a black guy, they just started shooting him. If it was a white guy, they wouldn't have shot in there. You know, they tell you that. And then you got people like Al Sharpton and Benjamin Crump out there, you know, saying they're having their say. You know, they're licking their chops because they're about to rake in some delicious dollars. And then, you know, you have Roland Martin, the little round-headed guy, the prince of the apostles of blackness. He showed the funeral on his channel on YouTube. Now, I don't know why the police shot at him like they did, but, you know, this is being treated as a racial case. They're trying to George Floyd this. You know, they're trying to, and when I say George Floyd, they're trying to jump to conclusions before they get all the evidence out. And now that the evidence is out, they're still trying to push it that, you know, they shouldn't have shot him. But why in the world, if you know the police are knocking at your door, why in the world are you going to come to the door with a gun in your hand? Now, they said he had a peephole. He probably could have looked through the peephole and said, oh, that's the police. Let me put this gun away. Why are you going to answer the door with a gun in your hand? That wasn't very smart. Now, I'm not saying, I don't know this dude was, I can't say that he was innocent, so to speak, but, you know, he came to the door with a gun. I don't know if he pointed it at them or whatever, but it was foolish for him to come to the door with a gun in his hand. It was very foolish. One thing, too, I don't know if the police were, you know, maybe they were jacked up, you know, excited, because most police officers, they end up getting killed in domestic disputes. The domestic disputes are usually where most of your police officers get killed. And I don't know if the police officers were aware of this, or they were like, you know what, this is a domestic dispute. Let's be on hair trigger right here, you know, dealing with this dude or whatever. But I don't know why they shot him or whatever, but it's being treated as a race thing. And once again, people want to make this out, oh, this is what happens to us black people every day, which it doesn't happen every day. Now, to be honest with you, I do think there needs to be some reform in police. You know, some police officers, they take their badge and that gun a little too serious. Some of them think they're big wheels and whatever. But that has nothing to do with race, because you get white people that get killed at the hands of police. And people can come up with this thing and say, well, if he was a white person, he'd still be alive. You don't know that. Give an example of where a white person in that same situation survived being killed by the police. And I'm not talking about something from the 60s or the 50s. I'm talking about something fairly recent. You can't find it. But this was an unfortunate set of circumstances, and it ended with this young man getting his life taken from him. Now, why don't we try to figure out why people called in a domestic dispute? Because apparently it was more than one person in that apartment at that time. Why don't we look into that as well? It says a Florida sheriff publicly released body cam footage from a deputy who fatally shot a black airman. Of course, they had to put black in. This is how they do. If he was a white airman, they would have just said who fatally shot an airman. But they had to put black in there. They know what they're doing when they do this. They're trying to incite something, because they're trying to push for ratings. And this is at CNN.com. It says a Florida sheriff publicly released body cam footage from a deputy who fatally shot a black airman in his home last week, and disputed claims from the victim's family that the deputy had gone to the wrong apartment. Okaloosa County Sheriff Eric Aiden showed the video during a Thursday news conference shortly after an attorney for the 23-year-old airman's family called for its public release, saying that the victim's girlfriend was FaceTiming with him and believes the deputy was at the wrong unit. The victim was identified by his family as Roger Fortson, an active duty senior airman, according to attorney Ben Crump. You know, and you know where this is going when you hear that name, Ben Crump, who held a news conference earlier Thursday. Crump and Fortson's mother described him as a patriot who respected authority and hoped to buy his mother and younger siblings a house. Okay, yeah, let's sugar this up. Let's make a person who's guilty not look as guilty because, oh, he respected authority and he was going to buy his mother and younger siblings a house. They know what they're doing when they put this in their report. The sheriff, who met with Fortson's family shortly before his news conference, said he asked the Florida Department of Law Enforcement Division to handle the criminal investigation as is required. While that probe is ongoing, he said no determination has been made as to whether the deputy's actions were justified or not. The deputy has been placed on administrative leave, which is usually, you know, the procedure when something like this happens. The state attorney's office in Okaloosa County will wait for the Florida Department of Law Enforcement to finish its investigation before it decides whether to pursue charges in the fatal shooting, the office told CNN. There is no expected timeline for when the investigation will be completed, a spokesperson said. What we do know at this time is that the deputy did announce himself, not once, but twice, yes, and we saw that on the body cam. Mr. Fortson's comments indicate that he did acknowledge it was law enforcement at the door, and he arrived at the door with a firearm in his hand. If you acknowledge that that's the police at the door, why do you have a gun in your hand? The deputy knocked on the correct door. He did not cover the peephole or otherwise obscure his view in any way, and he didn't. But Fortson's family reiterated their belief that authorities went to the wrong door. They didn't go to the wrong door. And see, this is what I'm saying. When people are already in one direction of in a certain direction of belief, when you show them that their belief is wrong, they still want to continue on that course of belief. And it says here, we remain adamant that the police had the wrong apartment as Roger was on the phone with his girlfriend for a substantial amount of time leading up to the shooting and no one else was in the apartment, Fortson's family said in a statement following the release of the footage. Now, it says what the body cam footage shows. Deputies responded last Friday to an apartment after receiving a call for a disturbance in progress, Aiden said in a previous statement. Hearing sounds of a disturbance, a deputy reacted in self-defense after he encountered a 23-year-old man armed with a gun, and after the deputy had identified himself as law enforcement, the sheriff said. Now, I can't tell if the deputy was defending himself because it was hard to see if this dude had aimed the gun at the deputy. The deputy shot the man who later succumbed to his injuries, said the sheriff. The deputy involved in the shooting has not been identified by officials. The body cam footage dated May 3rd begins at roughly 4:28 p.m. with a deputy arriving at what appears to be an apartment complex. A woman at the complex is heard telling the deputy there was a disturbance in apartment 1401 and that it was getting out of hand. And guess what shows up on the body cam? Guess what number shows up on the body cam? The address is 1401. The address is 1401. So they weren't at the wrong apartment. The same woman tells the deputy she previously walked by the apartment and heard yells and a slap, but added she wasn't sure where it came from. The deputy takes the elevator to the fourth floor and knocks on the door three times. The apartment number 1401 is visible in the footage. He announces himself twice, saying, "Sheriff's office, open the door." There's nothing heard on the footage from inside the apartment. Within seconds of the apartment's door opening, the deputy and is then seen firing his weapon. Fortson is seen standing at the door with his hands down and what appears to be a lowered firearm in his right hand. He immediately falls to the floor as the deputy fires. At least five shots are heard. While Fortson is on the floor, the deputy yells, "Drop the gun." Fortson is heard saying, "It's over there, and then I don't have it." The deputy continues to point his weapon at Fortson and tells him not to move while Fortson remains on the floor. The deputy continues pointing his weapon at Fortson while calling for EMS. Deputies communicated with dispatch that Fortson had been shot six times with multiple gunshot wounds to the chest, with one exit wound. Whoa. According to police dispatch calls obtained by CNN affiliate WEAR. Forrest's family said after the video's release, it is very troubling that the deputy gave no verbal commands and shot multiple times within a split second of the door being opened, killing Roger. He did give a verbal command. He told the dude to step back. As the officer didn't tell Roger to drop the weapon before shooting, was the officer trained to give verbal warnings? Did the officer try to initiate life-saving measures? Was the officer trained to deal with law-abiding citizens who are registered gun owners? Their statement added. Footage released from FaceTime call during shooting. Later Thursday, Crump also released nearly 4 minutes of the FaceTime call. He says Fortson was on with his girlfriend when he was shot. The video shows what appears to be the ceiling of an apartment as a man, presumably Fortson, can be heard groaning and saying, "I can't breathe." Another man, presumably the deputy, tells him, "Do not move, stop moving." The deputy can then be heard saying, "Hang on, man, we've got an ambulance coming for you, don't move." Presumably speaking to others, the deputy then says, "We're good. He had a gun since he opened the door." The deputy is heard shouting, but much of it is inaudible. Now, I didn't see that video by Benjamin Crump, but, you know, knowing him. Another person can later be heard detailing Forrest's wounds, saying, "We've got 3 gunshot wounds, 1 exit," before another voice says, "Yeah, he shot up." Eventually, someone is heard saying Fortson has 6 gunshot wounds. Fortson was pronounced dead at a hospital. Police dispatch, audio obtained by CNN on Friday adds some additional perspective to the events surrounding the shooting. In the audio, a deputy can be heard saying he is responding to a disturbance, physical in progress, at 319 Racetrack Unit 1401. It is the same address where Fortson was shot, according to the Sheriff's Department. Don't have anything further than a male and a female. It's all fourth-party information through the front desk at the Leaning office, the responding officer says. About 4 minutes later, the deputy is heard saying, "Shots fired, suspect down." He asks for emergency services and then says multiple gunshot wounds to the chest, black male. A dispatcher is then heard asking for medical units before saying they are asking that you step it up. Fortson was playing video games, family says. In their earlier news conference Thursday, Crump and Fortson's mother described him as a responsible young man and a patriot who had long dreamed of serving in the Air Force. "To the Sheriff's Department that took my gift, I need you guys to tell the truth about my son. I need his reputation right," Forrest's mother said. Where's the father? I digress. "I know my son did not do anything to you guys. If he scared you or if you guys wasn't trained properly, I apologize," she says, "but please clean my baby's reputation." Fortson entered active duty in November 2019 and was assigned to the 4th Special Operations Squadron, according to a statement from the Air Force, which noted the shooting occurred at the airman's off-base residence. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin is closely following the reports of the shooting, Pentagon spokesperson Major General Pat Ryder said Thursday. Crump said the 23-year-old had been home for about 30 minutes and playing video games prior to the shooting. Fortson heard 2 separate knocks at the door, and when no one could be seen through the peephole, he retrieved his gun, Crump said, citing Fortson's girlfriend. Crump said Fortson's gun was legally owned. Okay, now, from what I saw on the video, there's no way those police officers blocked that peephole. The girlfriend said law enforcement responded to the wrong apartment, and there was no disturbance there at the time, Crump said. Fortson was alone at the time, Crump said, citing Fortson's girlfriend. Fortson was on the phone with his girlfriend in the apartment by himself with his dog, Crump told CNN's Jake Tapper Thursday evening. They had the wrong apartment. No, they didn't. Shooting calls to mind past incidents, of course. While details about the shooting remain murky, the incident echoes other shootings in recent years in which a black man, of course, they had to, you know, make sure it was a black man or a woman, was killed by law enforcement in their home. In 2019, a former Dallas police officer was sentenced to 10 years in prison after fatally shooting Botham Jean, I think that's how you pronounce his name, in his apartment the year prior. The officer, off duty but still in uniform, lived on the floor below Jean's and said she approached what she believed to be her own apartment when she saw Jean inside. Tatiana Jefferson was killed that same year when a Fort Worth officer responding to what police believed to be a burglary shot her through her bedroom window. I never heard of that one, Tatiana Jefferson. The former Fort Worth officer was sentenced to nearly 12 years in prison in 2022. I haven't heard of the Tatiana Jefferson case. But of course, there are going to be some people that want to make this into like a Breonna Taylor type of thing, which Breonna Taylor was not killed while she was sleeping. But they'll try to say that this was like, you know, the Breonna Taylor thing, you know. But now, like I said, I don't know why the police officer really, maybe something happened in that split second when he told him to step back. You know, maybe he acted like he was, maybe he moved the wrong arm or something like that. Or I don't know what happened. I really don't, you know. And the video is not conclusive. But anyway, I'm going to go ahead and get ready for halftime. And I see you guys in the queue. I see you guys in the queue. But I'm going to get ready for, you know, to do the advertisements. And when I come back, I'll mention another incident, so to speak, and then I'll get to the phones. You are listening to Black by Color only on CNM Radio.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. Brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
As Americans, many of us, sadly, have gone to the dark side because we just don't hear the truth in the news anymore. Many of us listen to the lying liberal media. They don't know the truth about America because what they are listening to is actively working to change it, and not in a good way either. They label all of us truth tellers and America-loving patriots as extremists because socialism is what they really want. It is time for a great American reset. Time to change how the American government works. As Thomas Sowell once said, it is hard to imagine a more stupid or more dangerous way of making decisions than by putting those decisions in the hands of people who pay no price for being wrong. That being said, CNM is now looking for a few new truth tellers to join our network and to help get the word out. If you have an idea for an America-loving show, email us at conservativenationmedia, all one word, 2017@gmail.com. Tell us what your idea is and what you want to name your show. We can also help set up a time and a day for when it will go live. So come and join Conservative Nation Media and know you're where the truth is being told. Conservative Nation Media, where America always lives.
Can pull the wrong lever, and it's still the wrong lever.
All right, welcome back to the show. If you would like to be a guest to call in to the show, the call-in number is 646-478-5284. That's 646-478-5284. And just a heads up to those of you all who might be trying to get into the chat room or whatever, I'm not able to pull up my chat room, so I'm not able to see your comments or anything. I don't know what it is. I think it's a Blog Talk Radio type thing. But just to give you a heads up on that, when I left, I was talking about this young man, Roger Fortson, being killed by the police and people trying to make this out to be a racial thing. It's an unfortunate set of circumstances, but once again, this doesn't mean that he was killed because he was black. You know, like I said, looking at the video, I can't tell if he pointed a gun at the police officer or he moved a gun or he twitched or something like that, and that's why the police shot him. But people are trying to treat this as another way to prove that, you know, white police officers are after our black, you know, black folks. So, but anyway, there was another incident I wanted to talk about before I go to the phones. And this involves a popular rapper named P. Diddy, Puff Daddy, or P. Diddy, or whatever his name is. And let me pull this up. P. Diddy has been facing a lot of scrutiny lately. A lot of the details are lost on me because I'm not a person who follows P. Diddy. The only song that I know by P. Diddy is that song Come With Me at the end of the Godzilla movie in 1998. That's the only song I know by him. I don't follow P. Diddy. I never listened to P. Diddy. I don't listen to that kind of mess that he pushes, all these, you know, gangster rappers and everything. I don't listen to any of that. But it seems like he's been coming under scrutiny lately for sexual allegations or something like that. But here lately, let me get this up. Here lately, a video has come out showing P. Diddy, and a lot of people are like, you know, P. Diddy, you done, man. You done after this. It shows P. Diddy assaulting his girlfriend at a hotel, and he's wrapped up in a towel, and he comes on the girl, he throws her down on the ground, and he starts kicking her. Then he drags her through the hallway. You know, the girl is trying to call. The girl is like, you know what? She looked like she wants no more of this. So she's like, you know what? I'm gonna call somebody. I'm gonna leave here. So P. Diddy throws something at her. I think it was a glass or something. But it wasn't a good look for P. Diddy. And to me, this is not surprising that someone like P. Diddy would act like this. And I learned yesterday, why they used to call him Puff Daddy. Because they said when he was a kid, he was very temperamental. And you ever see these kids when they get mad, they puff their jaws out like that? You know, that's how he got the name Puff Daddy. And I think, you know, that may have applied to him into his adulthood. Because with the way he was throwing this young lady around, he looked like he needed some anger management. And I'm not surprised with this because if you listen to P. Diddy's music, like I said, I don't sit down and listen to him, but a lot of his music is gangster rap, you know, rapping about, you know, women and drugs and crime and stuff like that. And this doesn't surprise me about him. And people have enough nerve to call a lot of this music art. And they're like, man, you know, and I think a lot of the modern, I think rap was basically altered in the 80s when this gangster rap stuff came out, the NWAs, you know, Ice Cube and all these others came on the scene. I think they messed music up permanently. This is just my opinion, okay? But they come out with all this gangster rap, and everyone's like, oh, man, this is good. This is good. Now, what's good about rapping about, you know, sleeping with women and doing drugs and hating the police and everything and stuff like that? This shouldn't surprise you that P. Diddy shows this kind of attitude. And when I saw it, you know, my wife was showing it to me. I said, you know what? I'm not surprised. Because this is the type of lifestyle that he raps about. You know, you hear others like 50 Cent and Drake and all these others. This is the type of lifestyle that they rap about, and people buy their records by the millions, and these guys win Grammy Awards, or they get nominated for Grammy Awards. They win other kinds of awards, Soul Train Music Awards, BET Awards, Dimble Wacky Awards. The last one, I just made that one up. But they win all these awards, and people look at them as legitimate musicians and artists in the music world. We remember Chris Brown when he beat up Rihanna back in 2009, you know. But this is the lifestyle they talk about. They always want to be, you know, the boss man and everything. And they love movies like Scarface. But it shouldn't surprise anybody that someone like P. Diddy would act like this. And I look at it, I'm like, you know, I'm not surprised. I mean, you hear it in his music. And, you know, these ladies, they like to get up with these rappers because, you know, they got the money and everything. And all they want to do is get up with this person because this person is making a lot of money. And just because he's making a lot of money doesn't mean he's bought himself some etiquette. He's bought himself some decency. And I'm just as well to blame these girls for what happens to them when they get up with these type of people. This is what's going to happen to you when you get someone who's gangster-minded and has, you know, this gangster rap all in their minds all the time. And it doesn't surprise me one bit. Now, I'm not about to go into this whole band type of music, you know, band certain types of music type of thing. I'm not that type of person. But when you listen to the lyrics of some of his songs, that's the lifestyle he talks about. So we shouldn't be surprised if he beats up a couple of H words. Or he pulls out a gun and shoots someone for no reason at all. Because that's the lifestyle they want to live. And then you get these people talking about, well, you know, they're doing it because, you know, their producers are white and this is the type of content they want them to put out. Nah. That's the same excuse they give for why black people are on drugs now. Well, they wouldn't have been on drugs if the white man didn't introduce it to them. Well, then you didn't have to accept it. You ever thought about that? But this is the type, P. Diddy puts this music out because this is his mode of thinking. Ain't no white man put him up to this. He does this of his own volition, and he knows it makes money, and that's why he continues in this type of lifestyle, because he knows it pays the bills. And I saw that, I said, you know what, and I was telling my wife the other day, I said, if I ever treat you like this, you have the right to pull out a knife and go to cutting. Because it disgusts me when I see a man treat a woman like that. It really does disgust me. I've been married to my wife. It'll be 20 years in November. I have never put a hand on her to hurt her. Never. because that type of lifestyle disgusts me, and I don't understand why these men, even these men with this money. I mean, could you, if you got all this money, but you can't buy yourself a good attitude? But anyway, oh boy, I tell you. Sorry, people, I just had a little shift here. I'm sorry, folks. I just had a little mental lapse right there. But anyway, I need to get ready to dodge some fruit bats. That's my fruit bat alert. Okay. Now, those of you all who've been on the show, you know what that means. That means if you're going to come on here and be a fruit bat, you better hang up right now, or I'll be glad to oblige you. Now, people I consider fruit bats are people who like to use excessive profanity, character assassinations, straw man arguments, gaslighting, just coming on the program to be disruptive. If you want to involve yourself in that type of activity, then I'm going to tell you you're going to have a very short visit on this program. Okay, I don't care if you agree with me or disagree with me on the points or anything like that. You don't have to be contrary when you make your point of view known, okay? So we're all adults here. We all can have adult conversations. So having said all that, let's go to the phones. Let me get this first caller. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show.
Brother Vince, man, I'm really sorry I haven't been in communication with you recently. But, man, I've got to tell you, every time I've been trying to get through to you, man, I've had to fight my way through swarms of fruit bats. And you know how obstructive these fruit bats can be. So I'm just letting you know that's the reason why. So, you know, but I found a way to neutralize these fruit bats and keep them at bay, so it shouldn't be that much of a problem from now on. So I'm just letting you know. And I'll bring an explanation.
I'm trying to neutralize them on my end, too, because last week I was supposed to have a show, but Blog Talk Radio acted up and I couldn't do a show. But I'm here today.
Yeah, I noticed that. That's been happening to a lot of folks lately on Blog Talk, it seems. But anyway,
I was really glad to hear your
recitation of the circumstances involving the shooting of this unfortunate airman in Florida. And I'd like to add a little bit of what I thought about it. Now, the reason there's so much outrage over it, because it's fairly clear that the gentleman that was killed did not deserve to be killed. He did nothing to warrant being killed. Certainly not by people whom our tax money supports in their endeavors. So, I mean, that's part of the outrage. And I shared that same sense of outrage, too, because my impression was the sheriff's attempted, my first impression, that is, which later was shown to be erroneous, that they attempted a tumultuous entry into the apartment and that this airman had reacted with a firearm because he believed he was being invaded by home invaders. And then they shot him. Now, obviously, that first impression was incorrect. Now it is clear the deputy knocked on the door, announced his office, and the gentleman came out with a firearm in his hand. Now, having established that basic set of circumstances, as someone who has studied hundreds of police-involved shootings where officers were shot and where police officers had to shoot themselves, because it was my job as a firearms instructor, studying these incidents in order to formulate training for my students when they came to my to firearms qualification, we had to do firearms qualification four times a year, every quarter. We had to do firearms training and shooting. So I was pretty actively involved in the issue. The one thing I had to regularly teach them over and over again was action beats reaction. Now, even though he has a firearm pointing down at the ground, I want you to time how long it takes you to bring the firearm from pointing at the ground and up to your waist level where you can, remember, they're less than arm's length away when you open the door, or maybe arm's length. And
yeah,
it takes you about an eighth of a second or less to do that, to go from pointing down the ground to firing position where you can squeeze off a shot. Now, I'm not saying that what this officer did is right, because I don't think the investigation is complete enough for me to know or not yet. But if he can articulate and make a convincing argument that he was in genuine fear of death or bodily harm when he opened the door, then there's no way they're going to be able to say that he's guilty, certainly of murder, voluntary manslaughter. I doubt even that would hold up. If he can genuinely articulate why he believed this airman was a threat to him or not. It doesn't matter if you're a registered gun owner. It doesn't matter if you've got a lawful permit. None of that matters, because he doesn't have any way of knowing at that time. The only thing he knows is there's a person there with an instrument that could cause death or serious bodily harm instantaneously, and he's got to make a split-second decision whether to shoot or not. That's the only thing that matters. And believe me, I have studied hundreds of these incidents in my career, hundreds. And many police officers were shot. Many of the incidents begun in precisely the manner in which that incident unfolded. I mean, precisely. Someone opens the door, the gun in their hand, police officer looks at it, guy brings up split second later, cop a shot. So I'm not going to be so quick to make a conclusion on it, you know, without at least hearing someone out. And let me give this issue to you guys just for your consideration. If I'm going to code to the door because I think someone is approaching me who might face a threat, and I think I need to arm myself with a gun, and you know I'm all, you know, ain't nobody out here more protective of the rights of the Second Amendment than me. You know that. Nobody can beat me with this. But there's such a thing as prudence. You've got to make prudential calculations when you have a gun. And if I think someone's at my door, and they might be enough of a threat that I got to come to it with a gun in my hand, I'm going to say, who's at the door? I'm going to yell as loud as I can. Who's there at the door? Identify yourself, please. That's what I'm going to do. And I'm going to be kind of in as much comfortable position as I can when I do it. Now, if I hear somebody say, deputy, police, I'm going to take a look at my closed circuit camera, see if it looks like they are, in fact, a police officer. Then I'm going to take my gun, and I'm going to stick it in a small on my back, and then I'm going to go to the door and cautiously open it a crack, unless, of course, they decide to push in which case I can't do nothing about it. But I'm going to open it cautiously with a crack of the door and say, yes, what can I do for you? That's what I'm going to do. Then I'm going to have the gun in a small on my back. I'm not going to have it in my hand if there are cops coming to the door, and I think they're really cops. I'm not trying to blame this airman. I mean, I hate to hear a man serving his country in the service of his country in the armed forces of the United States is killed, and he didn't warrant killing. But, I mean, look, everybody's responsible for their actions. And like I said, there is such a thing as prudent. And maybe this officer there, and then I'm also willing to allow for the fact that maybe this officer is a bit too panicky. Maybe he doesn't have enough judgment or common sense. All of these factors could be in play. All of them. I'm not eliminating anything. And I wish people, when they consider something like this, would keep that in mind, too. Because the idea
That's
is
right.
not to lynch anybody, nor excuse anybody. The idea and the purpose behind everything is to find out what the facts are and how we can prevent this kind of thing from happening again. And I got to say, in the training I gave police officers, six police officers that I trained over the years were involved in shootings. Five of them where they had the fatally injured suspect, and all of them were found to be justified. And that is the thing that I am most proud of in my career. Not that they had to kill anybody, but the fact that when the issue came, based on, and someone will come back and say, yeah, you know, based on the training you gave me, it just kicked in like muscle memory. I really appreciate the time you take. That's one of the things I'm proudest of, that they said that my training helped them in that situation. And and believe me, I take it gravely. And whenever I hear about these things, it really disturbs me. And that's why I want to go into them.
And the thing about it, too, and like I said before, I couldn't tell if the young man did point the gun at him, because it was like a split second there, because the officer was kind of off to the left a little bit. And I couldn't tell. And I heard the officer say, back up. And then he started shooting. And I don't know if the suspect had pointed a gun at, but from what I saw was the victim had his had the gun pointing down.
Now, yes, he did.
Like you said, it could take a split second for someone to point a gun at you, and that split second where that part of the door was blocked, and I couldn't really see if he pointed a gun at him. You know, that's one part I think they need to investigate right there. Because the doorway was kind of blocking his arm to show, you know, and it kind of prevented you from seeing if he did point the gun at the officer. But I did hear the officer say back up first, and then he started shooting a split second later. So I really don't know what really, you know.
I think Devin gave an inappropriate command. He should have been drop the gun. And he yelled it loud, drop the gun. You know, that should have been not back up. What's the point of backing up with a gun in your hand if the guy intends to shoot you? But I don't think the man was going to shoot him. I really don't think this airman had any intention to shoot the deputy. I mean, for all I know, he might have for whatever reason. But there's no reason for me to make that conclusion. But the problem was, he came to the door with the gun in his hand. The deputy had announced his office. If you're going to come to the door with a gun in your hand, and you want to confirm that this is really a deputy out there, not somebody just trying to give you a ruse for a home invasion, then you take the appropriate action before you even open the door to convince yourself
that
this guy's really a law enforcement officer. And then when you
open
the door, don't have the gun in your hand. Like I said, put it in the small of your back, in your waistband or something. Well, at least you can get to it if something goes down sideways. Look, everybody, look, when the firearms are concerned, everybody's got to be prudential. It ain't just incumbent on the police officers. Because like I said, this is literally a split second. I'm telling you, I have read of dozens of incidents that follow these exact same circumstances where police officers wounded or killed. Exactly.
Yeah.
He has no way of knowing the guy is in the Air Force. He has no way of knowing he's a lawful gun owner. He has no way of knowing he's got a concealed carry permit. He's got no way of knowing if the gun is registered. He doesn't know any of that. All he knows is an adult male right there with a gun in his hand as he opens the door. And like I said, everything, eighth of a second or less to come from resting on the ground up the waist level where he squeezes the trigger off and you can wound to kill the officer or multiple shots.
Yeah.
So I'm just not. Yeah. I'm just not going to jump to any conclusions on this one. I want to see all the stuff coming in. I wish this young man had been more prudent in the way he approached opening the door, and certainly not with a gun in his hand, presenting toward a law enforcement officer.
Yeah, that's the problem I have. You know, why are you coming to the door if you know this is? He's announced that he's a police officer twice. And you're coming to the door with a gun in your hand where the officer can see it. You know, that wasn't the smartest move, you know, but other factors in this, you know, the people saying they came to the wrong door. I don't know if he was on FaceTime with his girlfriend. I don't know, you know, maybe he was. I just don't know, but the thing that bothers me the most about this is how they're trying to George Floyd this thing. You know, oh, he was a black guy, and if he was white, they wouldn't have shot him, and you know, and then you got Benjamin. Whenever you hear Benjamin Crump, you know,
I can imagine all the outrage and all of the look. I don't believe this man did anything wrong and was killed. I really don't. I have no reason to believe that he did. He He's just an unfortunate victim of circumstance based on everything I know right now. You know, and it's a shame, but I would submit to you, though, the department will probably bear some significant civil liability for his death. I don't know if it should be a criminal action taken against this officer, you know, or this deputy, but still, I think it's fairly safe to conclude they will incur some civil liability for his death. But to try to make this into some kind of George Floyd federal outrage case or, you know, a Fred Hampton thing or something, no. I don't see any reason for that thus far. Like I said, I might got an open mind. You show me some more evidence that maybe changes my mind, I'll probably be happy to. But right now, I haven't seen it. I don't think it's so. I think it's based on all the words and the video camera and what you described and everything else, it's just one of those god-awful things.
Yeah. And let me hold you right there. Let me get this other caller on here. Let's see. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show.
He should be charged with murder. See, here's the thing. Just because he announced himself for the door don't mean anything. You don't know who's on the other side of the door. People do that stuff all the time. Another thing, the victim was in his house. He can walk around with a gun in his house, bathroom, flip it around and around. He was in his house. And another thing, when he opened the door, the police officer should have told him. He had quicker time to tell him who he was real quick and why he was there before the man could have pulled the gun. The police officer was in the mode of, oh, my, here's a person with a gun, and he shot him. That's what's going on there. Instead of stepping aside and step back, he should have told him who he was. It's like that case in Texas I put in the chat room with Ms. Jefferson. Ms. Jefferson stayed across the street from a neighbor. A neighbor looked over there like 2 in the morning, something I'm not knowing what's sure, and seen the front door open. So he calls the police, non-emergency call. The police comes. And I don't think he parked in front of the house. But he walks around the back and made some noise. Miss Jefferson is sitting there in the living room playing a TV game with her son. So quite natural, she gets up with a gun. I ain't going to say it's quite natural, but she gets up and got her protection and goes to the back in the way of the kitchen. Now, in the way her house is made, when you walk through the front door, it's right to the right, you're in the kitchen. I said that she was cooking some food and burned it and had the door open to let the smoke out. But this cop, as soon as he looked through her front window and see that she's got a gun after she went and investigated what was going on in the back, he hollered, show me your hands, show me your hands. Then he shoots through the window and kill her. That's murder. What kind of fool do some shit like that?
And see,
you know, you said that people were trying to turn it into a George Floyd. Well, that's based on the source of the information that they received. You got the sources going around there that's describing things and saying everything because it's hot off the press. They want to get it out. So that's based on the information that people seem that they make those determinants. But this guy was in the wrong. This man. Now, I gave you another, I think I texted that to you, where Indiana allows you to kill an officer, use deadly force against an officer who's doing something wrong. That's what they probably should have had in Texas. What do you do when you got somebody concealed open carrying like they do in St. Louis? Blacks open carry with AR-15s in the city of St. Louis, walk around the street. So you mean every police officer walk up to them to talk to them? They're going to say, oh, drop the gun and all that crazy, man, all that stuff. I hate to go from town to town.
I try to
take things right down the middle. If you're wrong, you're wrong. You shouldn't be doing that. The onus is not on the airman. The onus is on the man who's supposed to be professional, trained, and representing an organization that's supposed to be there to serve and protect. But I think it was, and you know, what did he knock the, open the door. Open the door. That ain't the way you supposed to approach something like that with them damn commands. They like to give them commands. open the door. A bunch of bull crap.
And like I said earlier, I can't see my chat room because for some reason I can't pull my chat room up
there.
And everything.
Charles don't bought all the social media, so he's getting prepared for the presidential run up.
Okay, but I saw the reference to a Tatiana Jefferson, and I never heard that case before, you know, I did this program, and I'm looking at it now, and I'm like, you know, yeah, this looks like a similar case, and
there's a lot of cases like that.
I'm trying to get to the bottom of, you know, why this you know, officer shot this dude, and like you said,
You had another case in New York like that. When you had an Asian police officer was coming down, I don't know, he was looking for something. I don't know. I can't remember. He came down a staircase, and apparently he was coming down to the next floor, or maybe he came down two floors in the staircase, and we were just coming down the last flight to the door that leads onto the floor. A black man steps out, and he shot him. He shot him and killed him. Man just stepped out the hallway going to go down the steps, and boom, he gets shot by this police officer. I was talking to Sarge like this about this. You had two police officers. One was a white male, and the other was a black female. And the white male was beating a suspect, roughing him up. And the black woman says, "Stop that! You're not supposed to be doing that." He turns around and smacks the hell out of her. Well, if I had been her, I would have pulled my gun and killed him.
Mm.
But no, you know what happened to her? She gets rolled up, and I think she got fired. But anyway, she had a hard time, if she ever did, was able to collect her pension. So those things happen.
Well, there's another consideration I'd like you all to take into account with regard to specific incidents in Florida. First of all, the report to him was, and he went to the right address that the complainant reported to the dispatcher. The dispatch says it's 1401, so he wasn't at the wrong apartment according to where he was sent there. It's just that whoever reported this incident either got the wrong apartment or they were trying to SWAT this guy for some reason. You know what SWATting is. You know, maybe they wanted to SWAT this guy. And remember, he's going there on a potential domestic violence complaint. Any cop will tell you domestic violence complaints are amongst the worst kind you can get. They are amongst the most dangerous. The incidence of police injury and death answering domestic violence cases is off the chain in relation to other guys. Only a traffic stop is more dangerous. And as a matter of fact, most of those shootings I described here earlier that I discovered were exactly that. Police officers responding to domestic violence complaints where the offender answered the door with a gun in his hand and shot the cop. And when police officers are trained, they are trained for this very specific probability when answering a domestic call. So I think that's another factor that might have weighed into this. Again, I've got an open mind on anything contingent upon what was revealed in an honest, diligent investigation. But I'm just saying, factors that you could think of to combine causing a cop to wrongfully shoot somebody were present in this case.
You know what? If that's the case, the man, the police officer, first of all, the person they called that in, they should identify themselves and their address so when the police come, they can go talk to them to make sure that everything is like the person said. Then you standing there at the door, do you hear anything that sounds like domestic violence going on the other side of the door? No.
No.
That should be in the training, part of the training. If I didn't hear nothing that was going on in domestic violence, then maybe the dispatcher should have called the man's house and say, what's going on? That happens all the time because I've seen cases where you had women call the dispatcher, and her husband or whoever that's attacking her would try to take the phone, and the dispatcher would say, put her back on the phone. No, this cop was in the wrong. He's trigger happy. Because if a man's got his gun pointed to the ground, and you in a, hell, he's in his house. He should have explained himself. He had more time to explain himself, why he was there and so forth, before the guy could have pulled his gun. And also, there's certain risks that goes along with the job. That's why he's got on body armor and everything else. Apparently, the guy was not intending to shoot. But, you know, nowadays, there's nothing wrong with coming to your door with your gun on. And like I say, he didn't step out in the hallway. He was inside his house. The man is wrong. He needs to go to jail. He needs to be prosecuted.
Those are just a myriad of factors. That's just a myriad that need to go into investigation of this case. And what I saw was just an unfortunate incident. And you all know where I'm going with this. You know, when you got these people trying to make this out to be a racially motivated type of thing.
Some of them are racial.
Mm. Look at Mississippi.
Wait, look at Mississippi where you just had this case where these five police officers went to a jail. You had one here in Louisiana where they was taking them to a warehouse, a black suspect, and beating the hell out of them. All that came out. So it is a lot of that does go on. You got some idiots on the police department. They shouldn't be there.
Yeah. But the thing about it is we need to use caution before we jump to the conclusion that this was racially motivated. And see, when you see people like Ben Crump and Roland Martin and Al Sharpton getting in on this, see, these guys are looking for a payday, you know. And the news media, they're very crafty at telling the story before all the evidence gets out.
Yeah. That's why come their lawyers. You know, before you used your Brent Trump, they were using Jewish lawyers. You remember how Fred Sanford in some of his skits he used to talk about the Jewish lawyers? And it's probably the case that so much of this had went on unchecked and unfettered that people starting to get fed up with it.
Yeah.
So all those things come into play. Regardless, it's not the people that's supposed to be the professional. It's supposed the cop is the one that's supposed to be professional. He's supposed to be able to de-escalate. You had the same case with that kid in the park that had a play gun. I can't think of his name. And the man sitting across the street on the bench looked over there and seen it and called the police and says, gave his description and everything. Skin color say he's got a gun. He said, I can't tell what it is, but they got a gun. So a cop pulls up on the scene, opens his door, points a gun at this kid, and he kills him.
Yeah.
He's behind this car door. What was that kid?
I forgot his name, Tyreek Hill or something. So
I think you're speaking of the case of Tamir Rice.
Tamir Rice. Yeah,
Tamir Rice. That was in Ohio.
So some of these things are wrong because you got people on these police departments that don't need to be there. That's why I come after the Mike Brown incident. I wrote a white paper and sent it to every prosecutor organization I could think of, and that's simple. When a cop does something wrong, his name should go in a national database when he's accused and convicted, because the next the municipality should know who they are getting involved with. I wouldn't get involved with somebody that's going to cost me a lot of money in lawsuits.
That's true. And like I said, a lot of these factors need to be considered. But the problem is that a lot of us, we use our feelings to judge a case instead of looking at the evidence. And I'm just gonna be straight up and honest with you. I really do believe it was foolish for him. I know he was in his apartment, But I really do think it was foolish for him to have his gun in his hand when he knew it was the police. He acknowledged it was the police at the
door. And he didn't know it was the police.
But here's what I'm going to tell you, though. If I believe that the person at the door is not a police officer, I'm not going to even open the door. I'm going to say, I don't think you're a police officer. I'm not opening the door.
Yeah.
Rather than go approach somebody who might be a police officer with a gun in my hand and not knowing whether this guy is a nutcase or an unfit cop or whatever, because no matter what we say a cop should be, we know there are cops. We know we're going to encounter cops who are not that way. I was 23 years on a job, and I ran into a lot of cops who didn't belong on the job. So, I said, I think prudence is always the best course of action to take to minimize your ability to be harmed. And I think the primary factor that caused this, over and above everything else, based on what I know right now, again, I don't think this airman intended to hurt anybody. I don't think he intended to hurt a law enforcement officer. I definitely don't think that. I think this is an unfortunate series of circumstances combined to make this all occur. But I think that when you're dealing with these dynamic situations like that, it is wise to minimize your likelihood to be harmed. I think the primary factors that caused this over and above everything else was, one, the fact it was a domestic violence call. Two, the proximity of the deputy to the man at the door with the gun in his hand. I think those two things, first and foremost, will cause either perhaps the panic in the deputy or the a lack of realization on the airman's part. Maybe, it is a cop. Drop the gun. So I'm just saying that, you know, we don't look. Human nature is what human nature is. Human beings are imperfect, and like I said, we know there are cops on the job who just don't have the temperament or the heart to be police officers. Yes, being a police officer means you're going to expose yourself to danger. If you don't accept that as part of the job, that's another reason you shouldn't be on the job. But nonetheless, it also doesn't mean you have to set yourself up to be a sitting duck either. I think there's a whole host of factors here at play, and I want to see an honest investigation to reveal as much of the truth as we can possibly get to.
Well, you know, I can make my assumptions based on experience. You know, you say the proximity, and we're just talking. The proximity, well, you know, cops like to get real close to the door, so when the owner opened the door, they can put their foot there to keep the owner from closing the door, which he has a right to close the door.
Yeah.
And I had a case one time at a Vickers market, a Vickers service station, right at 9/11. And it was a white police officer with Pine Lawn Police Department. He was in Vickers. And I got to talking. I made some comments about this, that, and the other, and so on. And I don't know how we got to. I made an intro of this. Whites go around the world doing all these things, and now you got countries that don't like that, have been on the subject of abuse, and now they retaliate. So I think he's going to come up to me and say, well, my girlfriend is black. Then you know what he done next? He bumped chests with me. He come bumping his chest with me, trying to instigate a reaction. I wasn't armed or anything. I just went in there to get some gas or something. I don't know what, maybe a lotto ticket. He bumped chests with me. Now, why would he do that?
Yeah.
Now, we know why he would do it. And see, if he would do that to me, guess how many other people he had done it to? It's no damn good. And that's why, and those are things that fosters the feeling amongst society, especially black society, the way it is toward the police. Because you got some lousy, no good, demonic people on the force that, you know, in St. Louis, they say that white cops like to work the battle zones in the cities to get the experience. They don't want to work out in Clayton in the county. They want to come into the city and do their tour of duty. That's the saying. That way they see more quote-unquote battle action. Well, that's a bunch of bull crap. They should not be working in the city for that particular reason.
Well, I think if a police officer really
signed up for what they're supposed to do. They should want to go where they're most needed. And where police officers are most needed is where the violent crime is, wherever it may be. I think the police officer, now they're not supposed to want to do it just because they want adrenaline-style action. You are there to serve the public. And I don't think the police officer can do any service more meaningful and more significant than to either protect people's property or save their lives. And so I think a diligent, honest police officer should want to go where they are most needed.
Police one time, a block from my house. And I got out the, he asked me out the car, and he handcuffed me. And he went to rambling in my car. Well, I flexed my wrist, and the handcuffs came loose. So while he bent over in the car, I tapped him on the shoulder. I said, I think you maybe want to put these back on the right way. Something wrong here. This is actual truth. And when I got into court, and I talked to the judge, Judge Baker. I knew him very well because I was doing some work for that village after a period of time. But I told him, I said, hell, I flexed my wrist and the cuffs came loose. And I tapped him on the shoulder and said, you know, you might want to put these on right. Now, suppose I was a mean person.
Obviously, you had a cop who didn't put his handcuffs on properly. That's the problem with training, or Charles was one or the other.
Didn't do, but what I'm saying
his fault for not putting them on correctly.
I could have took his gun out of his holster and killed him.
Exactly. Yep. I think he better go check himself when next time he goes to handcuff a suspect. He might not be so lucky next time. I mean, it's like me. I got to make mistakes. I had this one woman one day. She was an Indian national. She was married to some high-ranking neurosurgeon at the University of Illinois Hospital. I mean, you know, and she's a fluent woman. And I stopped her. She's got no license. Well, that's what I found out later, anyway. But when I stopped her, she didn't have any a license on her. She didn't have any registration. She didn't have any identification in the car. She had a license, but she didn't have it with her. So I thought, okay, I'm gonna give you a cite. Driving without a license, you ran a stop sign. You're 15 miles over the speed limit. So I'm gonna take you back to confirm your identity, so I can give you a recognizance bond so you can come back, because you got nothing to show me who you are. So when I write you this ticket, so I got to take you back in. Now I know our regulations say you're supposed to handcuff anybody in custody. No exceptions, always. But she seemed like such a nice woman and all this other stuff. I said, I'm not going to handcuff her. I'm putting her back in the car. That was my fault for not following regulations. Now, we had a newly assigned car that hadn't gone through the squad car modification setup, and it had doors you could unlock from the inside. Okay? They made a mistake, and they sent it out, and they didn't put the unlockable doors from the inside. You could unlock from the inside. Well, I'm rolling down the road at 30 miles an hour. She jumped out the back. She didn't want to go through. She was so ashamed and panicky. She just jumped out the back, tried to get away. And she injured herself slightly. Thank God for me, because she landed on the grass. But, man, I could have got in a world of trouble. The only thing was, I got a three-day suspension out of it. But I learned my lesson. The rules are there for a reason.
Yeah.
And like
well,
I said, in this case, this guy who had you, Bianchi, he's lucky it was you that he handcuffed. Because if he had done that with the wrong suspect, he might have been dead. Just like me, not following the regulations, I could have been liable and responsible for the death of that woman.
Yeah. And
not following the rules.
This guy, he never asked me like he should have, as opposed to, is it okay I search your car? He never asked that. The reason why is because in that community, they had been getting away with that with people with the black community. And that community is predominantly black, where I was coming through. They get away with that stuff because the residents in those communities don't know their civic responsibility, and surely they don't know that they have preeminence over the actions of the police. Because if the police go out and agree somebody's civil rights, the liability falls on the community, i.e. the citizens. They're going to be responsible for it. And sooner or later, that's the ramification with everything. Insurance go up and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I don't know what the rules are. And was this in Missouri that this happened?
No, it was a long time ago.
What state was it in?
That was in Missouri, yeah.
Okay, well, I don't know what the rules are in Missouri, but in Illinois, you don't have to have a warrant to search the car if you're going to articulate probable cause. And if you can articulate probable cause, you can search the car because it's a motor vehicle exception to search warrants if you got probable cause to believe there's evidence of crime or contraband in the car. Now, I know cops abuse that all the time. You know, I know they do. It's true. But I'm just saying, though, if you have genuine probable cause to search a car, you don't need to ask permission to do it. And if somebody asks permission to search, that means they don't have probable cause, because they got probable cause, they're going to search and they're not going to ask permission.
Well, I wouldn't let, if they ask me, I'd say no, because you have some cops that plant evidence. There's been, you had one cop on YouTube was planting the evidence and it was revealed on his own goddamn body camera.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, they do that. I ain't going to lie. They do that. But like I said, Bianca, you got a right to say no, because if the cop's got probable cause, he doesn't have to ask for permission. If he's asking for permission, that means he's trying to get your consent to search because he ain't got probable cause that he can articulate. Maybe that's a problem.
Well,
it usually goes to court.
If you obtain evidence by search without a warrant, like that, then the evidence is impermissible.
Only if you can't convince the judge that you didn't have probable cause. If you can convince the judge you got probable cause, that evidence will stand up in court.
You had another case where the police in St. Louis, and I think it was Colonel Ronnie, the police goes to this man's house. For some reason or another, I don't know what it is, and they see a gun laying on the table. So they confiscate the gun. All right, Ronnie Robinson was the colonel, St. Louis City Police, one of the colonels. He found out about it, and he told them to take the gun back. He had no business taking it. They'll say, when they took the gun back, you had some white police officers that was involved in that didn't like what they was told to do, and tried to bring charges up on Colonel Robinson. They didn't like being told to do something like that. Although this man was probably on paper, he was in his house.
Well,
that's kind of crap that goes on.
Wait a minute. Now, why would they seize his gun?
They seen it laying there. And that's why Colonel Robinson told them to take it back.
So they didn't even make an attempt to determine if he was lawfully allowed to have the gun.
Yeah, in the house. They was in his house.
You said the gun was in plain view, right? It was in plain view when they were in the house.
On his table.
Okay, so.
In another room.
Okay, well, there's a thing they call the plain view doctrine. If a police officer sees something that's in plain view and it's not like, they're in the apartment lawfully. They've either been asked to come in or they receive permission to come in the apartment of the house, and they're in there. And they see something that looks like it's either contraband, evidence, or say an unlawful weapon. You know me, I'm against all these damn gun control laws, but they are the law. And I can't say a police officer can't enforce them if they're on the book. But let's say he sees a gun. Now, what he's supposed to do, like he was working, say, in Chicago, is this gun registered? And, you know, I'm against gun registration laws, but I'm saying that's a stupid law in that city, which is why I don't live there anymore. But anyway, is the gun registered, and are you in lawful possession of this gun? You're supposed to ask that. Now, if that guy can show he's in lawful possession of the gun, there's no grounds for him to take it. And if he ain't in lawful possession of a gun, not only are they supposed to take the gun, they're supposed to arrest him. Well, just taking a gun is a confiscation without grounds.
It don't have to be his gun in his house. It could have been his wife's gun, his brother's gun, his father's gun.
And that's why there are courts. And that's why there are courts to establish that if he cannot show that that gun is lawfully possessed. See, I don't like any of these gun control. If I had my way, I would eliminate every damn gun control in the nation, practically. I think I'm just saying that depending upon the circumstances, just having a gun in your house in plain view and the cops are there lawfully and they see the gun, they've got the right to make inquiries as long as these stupid laws are on the books.
Well, that wasn't the reason they came into the house. They came into the house for some other reason other than that. Like I said before, they got reprimanded for it. I think some of the ones, they got fired. That was some years ago. But I'm just telling you.
They just made a seizure without a justification. Because if you're going to make a seizure like that, you got to take the person in, too. Otherwise, you're just taking somebody's property without cause.
Well, they didn't take the man in. They took his gun and walked on out. That's why the colonel told them to take it back. Then he proceeded
This is doctrine called the plain view doctrine. Whether an officer sees something in plain view where he's got a right to be, then it's like in Illinois, again, with these stupid gun control laws they got in Illinois. They got a firearm owner's identification system in Illinois. If you possess ammunition or a gun, you got to have a firearm owner's identification card. I made a stop once where I saw a guy, stopped the guy. I wasn't going to give him a ticket. He ran a stop sign. He had all of his papers and all everything else. I noticed that he was a gang affiliated because when you run a check under the NCIS, you get a record of gang affiliation. He had gang affiliation. And I looked, as I was getting on to leave, I saw a shotgun shell on the back shelf behind the rear window. And I said, the 12-gauge shotgun shell. I said, hey, man, you got the FOID card for this? Because like I said, I got gang affiliation on this guy. He's got multiple felony convictions for a whole lot of stuff. So you got an FOID card. He said, I ain't got no FOID card. And I said, okay, you're under arrest. Because he ain't got an FOID card plus he's a felon in possession of ammunition. That's against the law in Illinois. Again, these laws are bad. They need to be challenged. They're on the books. Police officers have a legal right to enforce them. And particularly when you know somebody is funky, and I knew this guy was funky. I wasn't even going to write him a ticket until I saw the ammunition on his back seat.
Well, you know,
I wasn't even going to write him a ticket.
That's another reason why you shouldn't let police in your house.
But all I'm saying is that is an example of plain view doctrine. It's called in plain view.
Yeah. I understand that. That's the reason you don't want to let them in the house. Step out on the porch, lock the door behind you, because when they come in the house, now they can use that excuse about plain view of your guns over there in the gun room.
Exactly.
I tell
everybody that. Yeah. I say, don't let the police come into your house. If they want to talk to you, say, okay, I'll come out. We talk on the porch. Don't let the police in your house. If they see anything, and while they're legally in your house, they can take action.
Yeah, absolutely right. And that's why I'm saying I've seen cases where when the homeowner, they may not even be dressed appropriately. They're going to close the door so they can be presentable and step outside. Then here comes a big size 12 shoe blocking the closure of the door. That's illegal.
Cop cannot come into your house without a warrant, period. End of story. Or one of the exceptions to the search warrant rule, like exigent circumstances. If it ain't no exigent circumstance, a cop cannot come into your house without a warrant.
Like I told last night, Sarge. When you resigned from where you were, they probably celebrated.
Honestly, no shit. Some did, man. I got along really good with most of my colleagues, but some of them just couldn't stand me because I was constantly quoting the law to them. They couldn't stand it. So what do you quote me the law for? Because we're law enforcement officers. That's why.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right there. There are corrupt cops out there, but I'm just saying, though, we need to establish what cops are allowed to do. And then we need to see what cops are not behaving in the way that they're allowed to, because cops have too much authority to allow them to abuse it.
Yeah, most of them are good people. But see, I know for sure in the St. Louis area, you got white cops come from the outskirts and come into St. Louis and do they. See, they come into St. Louis, need to send these males to jail. That's the jail, the prisons in the outskirts area where their uncles, fathers, aunts work in the jail. So you got to keep feeding that system with some convicts. If not, they go out of business.
Well, right now in a lot of these jurisdictions, I don't think there's too much danger of that right now. In fact, right now, so many cops have decided to quit because they're getting tired of putting up with the bullshit. Some of them are quitting now. There's a shortage of them. So I don't think at this present time they got to worry about that particular thing.
That's the good ones, and they've been suffering from the bad ones the same way we suffer from bad people that do things in the community that looks like us from a distance. So we get caught up.
Yeah.
That's what it is. In this Jefferson case down there, that area had been burglarized by some idiots. And the neighbor across the street was afraid to go over and check on their neighbor. So they called the police.
Hey, you guys, this was a great discussion tonight. And, you know, and it goes to show that, you know, in a myriad of laws, sometimes things can get lost in the mix and everything. Someone messes up here, someone messes up there. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, how do you keep up with all these laws and everything? And you know, this was a very good discussion. Say again.
Well, you know, that's what we want to do, Vince. We don't want to just rant and rave. Bianca presented one side of the argument. I presented another. All your listeners out there can decide what they think is the best side of the argument. That's the way it should be.
I don't think
either me or Bianchi is here to tell people what to think. We're here to tell them what we think and let people make up their own minds about it. I think that's the best way for everybody to proceed.
Yeah.
That's
now,
right.
On the issue of P. Diddy, if P. Diddy, whatever he does in lyrics in his records, if it's legal, it's free speech, and there's a market out there that wants to listen to that, they got a right to listen to it. I mean, when I was coming up, some horrendous things was Mom's Mabel and Pig Meat Martin.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
And see, here's the thing about it. I have no problem with P. Diddy doing whatever he does. I never really listened to his music. But when you see him doing what he did to that girl, and everyone's like, oh, P. Diddy, oh, my gosh.
Do you know that was him? Well, look, Vince,
I got a problem watching a man commit an aggravated battery on a woman. I mean, I got a problem with
that.
Vicious kicks at her head. That's aggravated battery, what I saw on that tape.
Yeah.
The problem for anybody, though, is it's beyond the statute of limitations. It happened in 2016. It's long beyond the statute of criminal liability, so you can't charge him with it. It looks like there's probably some element of corruption that was involved in keeping him from being charged. There was some corruption somewhere that prevented charges from being brought to him in a contemporaneous time frame.
Well, to Bianchi's point, Will Smith had to pay Chappelle $40 million for that slap on stage. But the prosecutor should have prosecuted Will Smith the next day. It's not no third-party information. It's not where the police come out and start interviewing everybody. It's right there on video. He committed a crime against the state of California.
Yep. And to your point, Bianchi, are we sure that was P. Diddy in there? You know, and it's like this too. If that was P. Diddy, he's through.
Well, if anybody brings up a civil deposition or anything like that, and they get able to get Cassie Ventura in a civil deposition, she can attest to the fact that, yes, indeed, that was Play Daddy Combs who whipped my ass like that. And if you look at the video, it shows how it looks like him. So you got if you have a combination of her testimony and that video, I think that would be more than enough to establish that, in fact, that is P. Diddy on that video.
Yeah.
And that's the case, then he should be prosecuted.
Well, it's beyond the statute of limitations. Well, you can't do it now.
Yeah, that's the thing. But in the court of public opinion, he might be done.
Yes.
you know,
that's where the best word counts now.
That was a camera in the hallway.
Yeah.
It wasn't a surveillance camera. Well, why come the police? Did she report it the next day?
Apparently not. But here's the question. Why didn't the security personnel monitoring the camera report it somehow? I think he probably paid them off.
Yeah, well, he may have sleeping bed, ate too many donuts or something, you know.
No, I would not be surprised if P. Diddy got to them and paid them off not to reveal it.
Surveillance cameras in your damn hotel room anyway that you don't know nothing about. I've seen cases like that.
I mean, hey guys, that's a high-end hotel. You know the staff reviews those tapes.
In the hotel,
they're
not supposed to be in the hotel room where you can watch the occupants doing whatever.
Oh, no, but the lobby is public. It's public domain, man. That's a public area. Yeah, the cameras can take anything that goes on in the elevator lobby.
Yeah, you're right about that. But I said I've seen cases where they did have those cameras.
That would be illegal. That would be clearly illegal. Every state got a law against something like that.
You had another case where a guy, football player, hit his wife on the elevator. It's all kind of things. So my case is this: is that, man, I'm getting my grandson ready to start carrying a weapon. I inquired the other day. I went by the pawn shop and found out if they're FFL, so when I order a gun, I can have it sent there and they do all the paperwork. Then I inquired about any outlets around where I live that does concealed carry, for one, and also does gun safety and situation shooting. And she gave me some addresses. So those are things that should be done. That should be done anyway. All people in America, I think, especially your children, should undergo gun safety and the other two to get their concealed carry. And they need wear their weapon.
They need to make it tax deductible, too.
Damn right.
True.
That's the way disadvantaged people can have the opportunity to be able to get weapons. It won't be beyond their means.
That's right.
Wait a minute. Even more importantly, to hear the gun grabbers say it, the private means people aren't well trained enough. Like, that makes a difference. Because when Illinois had them stupid gun control assault weapons bans, here they got a guy like me, 20-something years in the armed service of the United States, 23 years a police officer, a firearms instructor, and all of a sudden, I'm not allowed to own what they call an assault weapon. So it ain't about training, and it never was with gun grabbers, but I'd like to throw that out there as though we're really serious about people being able to use guns responsibly. That's just another roadblock they want to throw in your way to keep you from having guns. Now, if they really meant what they say about training, they would pass laws to make it tax deductible or give you an actual subsidy to go through the training.
That's true. That would be a great idea, I think.
But they don't mean it. But they don't mean it, Vince. They don't mean it. They just say it.
They don't believe it. The number one enemy of American citizens is the federal government. Yes, and when stop and think, sit down at a table with a piece of paper and a pencil and write the things that they do that they shouldn't be doing, that deny you of your liberty, for one thing, and also to deny the free and unencumbered exercise of businesses. They are completely out of control.
That's right.
We
got to rein in this government at all levels, but especially the federal government, bring it back to its enumerated powers and leave everything else to the states.
Yeah.
This is the last point. Me and Sarge may sound bitter, but that's based on our experience. I mean, at least mine.
That's right.
I've had people call me name blacks. I'm supposed to be, just because of the color of my skin, I'm supposed to be a member of this movement. A member that I'm moved out. I stand up from a chair and have to turn around in circles until I can figure out which way to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll see you guys.
Well, guys,
take care of yourself.
Well, guys, I hate to cut in on it. You know, we're in the archives right now, but this was good. This is the type of discussion that I want to provoke, and try to get all sides, get all angles of a situation instead of just jumping to conclusions and everything. But sad to say, our news media is counting on us jumping to conclusions on anything that they report, because all they care about is their ratings and everything and stuff like that. But see, to have a discussion like what we just did tonight, this is a good thing. This is the thing I want to provoke. You know, you might disagree with some points I make, and I'll disagree with something you make or whatever. But we try to get the situation at all angles to come to a common conclusion. And that's basically, like I said, what I want to provoke on this program. Okay, next week that's Memorial Day weekend. I'll probably do a show next week. Yeah, so hopefully Blog Talk Radio holds up and everything, and hopefully I can get my chat page working by then and whatever. But really appreciate you guys coming on and giving your point of view about, the subject matter and everything. So next week, God willing, should have another program. Tell your mama, tell your grandmama, whoever, might want to listen to this show. But anyway, I'm getting ready to get on up out of here. This is Vincent E. Brown. I'm signing off. Until the next time, I'll see you on the rebound. You guys have a great week.